You have questions. Find your answers at starspsychics.com.
Hello, I'm Natalie, owner of starspsychics.com. I am dedicated to providing affordable access to spiritual advisors. Here are two satisfied clients who will tell you what it's like to work with me.
Quoting Jackie.
It's a comfortable site. Everybody is so friendly. They treat you like family.
Barb added this about Natalie.
She's a kind and caring person who gives accurate readings.
You have questions? Find your answers today at starspsychics.com. That's stars with a Z, psychics.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast. Stars with a Z, of course. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on. I've got the magazine up, which is a very big issue. And, you know, that's one of my big loves is the magazine and doing it and representing all these people through all their work that they do, their art, their poetry, their books, everything. I love to support the communities out there, and but everybody knows that. The magazine started in 1999, believe it or not. So it's but it wasn't like it is today. I mean, it's more advanced. Somebody wrote to me, a good friend of mine that submits every month, and she says, "Oh, you tell your team maybe they could do this." And I wrote her back. I said, "What team?" I said, "You're talking to the team. It's just me." She laughs. She says, "Oh, my gosh, I can't believe that." Yes, it's just me. I do it all myself, but it's a love that I have. So I'll be sending out in about 5 or 6 days reminders to submit your poetry excerpts, articles, just about anything, and it doesn't have to be necessarily spiritual or metaphysical. I mean, so long as it's done in good taste, I'll accept it. And I need an image to go along with it, and you can send it to StarsCast at mysticlivingtoday.com. And then, of course, my Stars with a Z Psychics.com. That is over 9 years old now, too. I mean, I've just been doing rolling along, haven't I? Some changes are being made. I want to remind people that the first 3 minutes are free if they're new clients. And you can only get one account. And we have a membership that's in your account. After you make a purchase, you'll see the membership. And it's going to go up, but I don't know when. But right now that is $19.95 for 3 months, and you get a lower rate for chat. So it's something to think about if you're going to use the chat a lot. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in my next guest. We've been chatting and kind of laughing, but that's what I do with all my guests before we start. His name is David Heron. How are you, David?
Yeah, hi, Natalie.
You doing good?
Oh, I'm doing well. I don't know if I'm doing good. I'm doing well.
Oh, well, you're alive. You're doing good.
Yeah, I'm struggling.
Yes, well, we were just talking about, you know, he's got some books that he's written, and I'm going to pull up his website because I don't rely upon my memory. I have the latest one in front of me. He talks an awful lot about the Lord, God or Not is one of his books that he did, and this latest one is The High Sign. So we're going to get into what could be a controversial subject, but not with me. It's not. Nothing is ever. I mean, I love talking and I love learning, and I'm sure he does too. So, David, how did you get started on the? How did you get started on this path? Now, I know you did sports books. You did on what, basketball, right?
That is a great question. In fact, I would have picked that one first. I was getting ready to retire from a career in sports writing. I was well along. My wife and I had plans to do stuff. And then I was just reading in the book of Isaiah, just casually, because I've read it many times before. I got to chapter 6, verse 8, and Isaiah is hearing the Trinity speaking together, you know, like there were three separate persons, which they are. You know, that's a mystery, what the Trinity really is. But anyway, they're speaking, and he hears them. And they're saying, well, who should go for us? Who should we send? Who will go for us? And Isaiah spikes up. I think he was really timid. He said, "Here am I, send me." And I thought for a minute, well, I've read this before, so why am I stopping? And I realized what I was trying to decide. And then all of a sudden I heard myself saying, "Here am I, Lord, send me." And what happened was, there was no retirement. The very next day I started to, as I was reading through Isaiah, I started to understand some of the prophecies that he had written after he had said those very same words. Talk about a coincidence. This was not a coincidence. This was amazing. I really did start to understand it, and I never had before. And then from there, well, you mentioned some of the books. It was a bunch of books and some other things too, but that was what started it.
And so you just kept right on, you know. But you have to have, you had a belief. You had a belief. Because you can't really write about something, you know, unless it's a fantasy or something, if you don't believe. Not with what you do.
I had the belief. Yes. I just didn't have the project in front of me. And then all of a sudden, it was there. I was really understanding things that I'd never understood before. And one of the things that eventually, when I get the New Testament, I started to understand a lot about the time just before Jesus returns and how all this is coming about. Not when. Jesus said no one is going to know when, but a lot of details in the Bible about the time just preceding Jesus' return. And I think we're starting to get into that very time period based upon the scriptures that I have read.
Well, you know, I have a lady who was a Mormon. She gave me a beautiful book. It had onion skin pages. Oh, God, I just loved holding that book. Isn't that strange? The pages were so beautiful. And she explained a lot to me, you know, and she didn't live out there in Utah, but she was definitely a Mormon. And she kind of enlightened me. She told me things like, you know, they do for each other, but they, and if you are part of them in some small capacity, they will help you. All you have to do is ask. And she said, I tested it out. I said, you did? She said, yeah. And she said, you know, I was going to move, and so I knew some of them, and I said, boy, I could really use some help. And she said, lo and behold, all these trucks appeared to help me move, they unpacked them.
Wow.
Now, yeah, she said, so it didn't matter where you were going. She said, and that you didn't have to be a true Mormon. All you had to do was be to know somebody, and they could tell, I think, David, that she was good people. Like, for you and I, they would know right away. I mean, you know.
But
that was an amazing story. But then she sent me this book. It was the Bible. And she hooked me on looking up things, and she said, just go over there. Go to Utah, wherever it's called. I can't remember now. You'll find everything you want to know. It's all there. All there. But, you know, we were just talking before we went on the air. You know, I was raised a Catholic girl, and you said you were a Lutheran, I believe. And for both of us, both religions, if you want to call them, we, in a way, it was kind of brainwashing. I shouldn't say that. But it was like it was this way and no other way. But there were some of us who stepped out of that sphere, if you want to call it, and started questioning things and looking. I did, and I'm sure you did. I realized, and you're probably going to laugh, that I was going to church every day. Oh, well, first of all, we wanted to get a ride to school, so we had to go with my girlfriend's aunt, and she went to church every day. So we had to do this before school, right? High school. Okay, we did this, and you know, one day, David, I sat there, and I looked around, and I questioned. I said, well, why do I have to be here to talk to God or Jesus? I don't have to be in this building. I can do this at home. Oh, they would never tell you that.
Yeah.
And from then on, I started looking and trying to understand things. I finished all the sacraments. I did all that stuff. But, you know, I realized that us sitting here, we can talk and we will be heard. Now, if you're looking for an answer, and I think you will attest to this, don't expect an answer right away. Don't expect an answer right away. But if you're open and you believe, that answer will come to you. It may not be the way you expect it to be, but it will. It will. I'm just a strong believer. So tell us a little bit about some of the things here about Jesus' return. You know,
well,
we all realize that he rose from the dead.
It.
We all know that.
Yeah,
and I'm going to interject
something
else to you. I believe in another life. I was there when he was on the cross. I have always felt that, even as a little girl. And I tried to help, and he told me, no, stop. You'll get killed. Don't. I'm doing this for all. And that has stuck with me all of my life. But go ahead. Yes. So what are your thoughts? Let's talk all about this. What about Jesus' return and miracles?
Well, the miracle, you just kind of led right to it when you talked about not expecting an answer quickly, because I had one just like that. In fact, it was published in nationwide publication of miracles. And what happened was my wife quit her job when she was in her mid-30s in order to spend time at home with the two elementary school boys that we had, and she was making half of the family income. She was running a hospital floor. She was a registered nurse. Both of us were well paid, but the problem was that with the reduction of 50% in the income, our lifestyle was way above what that would support. And I realized we're not going to make this. And I started praying about it, and we got deeper and deeper into the problem zone. It got to the point where the bank holding the mortgage contacted me and said, well, if you don't pay at least 1 month of the mortgage, we're foreclosing, we're going to take away your house next Monday. So here I was, you know. Talking about it, it's kind of amusing now, but it wasn't amusing then. I was so miserable. I went to church on Sunday morning, and I went back and forth, but finally did put my tithe in the collection plate because it was the right thing to do. And all day long, I'm worrying. I'm really worrying. And then come back to church that evening as we usually did. This, by the way, I was no longer a Presbyterian. I mean, a Lutheran at this time. We were in a Baptist church. But still, we went to church Sunday morning and evening. And Sunday evening, went back to church. And at the end of the service, the assistant pastor came up to me, handed me an envelope, and said, "The Lord told me to give this to you." And I said, "What is this?" I opened it up, and it was a check to the dollar and cent amount exactly of what we needed for the mortgage payment.
Oh my!
Had not told him. He said, "The Lord told me to give you this." And from that point to today, in spite of, you know, it still looked bleak because we were still way down. But then all of a sudden,
sure,
all kinds of things started to happen that were favorable,
right,
including publishing some books that were bringing income, and had no more real financial difficulty for the rest of my life to this time. And if you want to talk about a miracle, that was one. And the Lord is
that
good.
Was one. That was a big one. That was
he
a big
is,
one. I had
yes,
something happen
good.
To me too. I almost
and
died.
And he waited until the last minute on it. It wasn't like, you know, like you said, don't expect it to happen right now.
No.
Last minute, he did it.
And you were forever grateful. And you are forever grateful.
And there have been other things that happened too that were really very great, but. But that was really the start. I mean, that was the start of a whole new era. The beginning was the reading Isaiah. But this was just as important. And it happened, this happened a little bit before that. But it was in the same period of time when God was working on me and he had things for me to do. And
But the key here, David, is to believe.
Yeah.
If you don't believe, you right away put yourself in this category. I tell everybody this. At the end of my show, I always say, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And even on whatever I post anywhere, that's what I put. But you have to, and I don't know if it has anything to do with our upbringing or not, David. I just think that there are some of us that are chosen to do this kind of stuff. I was having, I'm going to tell you this, I was having a very bad day today. And I was so looking forward to you, talking to you, because you know what I knew? I knew once I talked to you, it would all be gone. And it is gone. I don't feel bad anymore. Yeah, I feel good.
I feel good. I feel good, too. I was a little bit nervous about it. But you're right. You know, Scripture says, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved. What's better than that? About belief, that's really the most important thing in Christian faith is believing. He says something, believe it. He's trustworthy. You can believe it.
And if it's coming from within, like from you or from me within, and you believe it no matter what, I mean, somebody will say, well, did you ever see Jesus? Yes, I did, David. I did. But you might not ever see him. But if you're listening to you, if you're listening to me and you, you're going to know that things do happen and can happen. But the first step is you have to believe, without a doubt. That's got to be in caps, in front of you, always.
Yeah. Yes.
Because there's no chance. If I was Jesus, if I was God, why waste my time with you? You don't believe anyways. I could be standing in front of you, and you'd say, oh, this isn't real. Well, if you stand in front of me, or if he stands in front of you, you know it's real.
And there are people who have had experiences with the Lord who denied them. Not everybody is
it's like us.
To
believe. Yeah, I know.
There are a lot of doubters out there. There really are.
Yeah, there are. But, I'm
going to
tell you a quick little story about what happened to me, because you're going to like this, because it's right in line with what we're talking about. My husband had Alzheimer's, and it was the kind that wasn't so nice. I mean, he would try to hurt me every day. So this one day, and I had to take care of him every single day by myself, I locked myself in the bathroom, and I sat on the floor, and I just sobbed because I kept thinking, how long do I have to do this? I was never physically hurt, but I know why. Anyways, so I'm looking down at the bathroom floor, and I see feet. No shoes, but just feet. And above the feet was part of a robe, like something long. It would be a robe, what I consider to be a robe. It wasn't a dress because it was long, right down to the feet. And it was like I recognized it, and I got up, and I was fine. I unlocked the door, and I was okay. It never happened to me again. I mean, and I never had that feeling that I couldn't do it, never after that. There were some scary moments, you know. And so when things like that happen and they take hold of you, it's very special, you know. And I just know that it was a part of my work on Earth was to take care of, you know, and I did it, and I did a good job, and I stand very tall. Even though I'm only 5'2", I stand very tall with it, that I did this. And nobody can take it away from me. Nobody can take it away from me, David.
That was a great event. I think about the end time and about the sign of Jesus' return, which is what the high sign is about, Is it all right if I read one half of a page?
Absolutely, absolutely.
It won't take long, because this was okay. Let me read.
This is your time. Absolutely.
All right. This is what I'm talking about. I think it's important. In 2006, at the end of a television show aired by the History Channel, and the title of it was "Comets, Prophets of Doom," the narrator made this summary statement, in quotes: NASA has plans to deal with an asteroid, but there is nothing anyone can do about comets. They are too large and show up too suddenly. What would we do if the average-sized comet came at the Earth? We would die, or a lot of us would anyway. Comets can come from any direction. We do not have the technology to defend against a comet. Comets are nature's unstoppable projectiles. And this I watched this TV show run around the time that I was really considering the possibility that the sign of Jesus' return would be a comet. And this kind of confirmed it, because it sort of said was, it's the only thing it can be. Because when you read the scriptures, it's clear that whatever is happening when Jesus returns is unstoppable. And believers are terrified. And this is the only terrifying object, really the only one, that can, well, the NASA guy, and I was expecting him to say, well, we're going to nuke it. And he said, we can't. There's nothing we can do. And that is what the return of Jesus is going to be like. There will be nothing anyone, any human being can do other than either believe or not believe, because it's going to be so awesome. The imagery in the scriptures is just unbelievable when you start reading it. And of all the things that I considered seven possibilities for the sign of Jesus' return. And they were like eclipses of the sun and the moon and an asteroid, and there were a couple other things. But the only one that even came close to fulfilling the awesome description in the scriptures is a comet. And this is why I believe that a comet will be the sign of Jesus' return. It's something that nobody can do anything about. So when people are terrified, and they will be, unbelievers, you mentioned belief. Well, belief is really the key thing. Unbelievers are going to be terrified. And those of us who do believe will have, I think, a great responsibility and opportunity to share our faith with those who don't. And I think that's what really going to be all about. There will be a period of time there when people will have the opportunity to become saved, born again, heaven-bound believers. And it will be, it's going to be great, but it's going to be scary.
It's hard to convince people that either for lack of understanding, they don't believe any of it. But I think you have to grow up with some kind of religion and get the background. I mean, I questioned it when I was really young. I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And, I, of course, I didn't tell my mother, and I didn't tell my father. He was Greek Catholic, and my mother was Roman Catholic. So I was baptized in a Greek Catholic church, and that caused a big ruckus because that's a no-no. But, you know, you have to have some kind of background. I mean, nowadays, I don't know that young people do. I don't, you know what I'm saying? They don't really go to Mass. They don't. Not like you and I did. I mean, that was a given. And you wore a little hat on your head. If you were a lady, you wore a hat. You dressed up nicely. You didn't go walking in there like you're on Skid Row. You didn't do that. You wore your nice Sunday best. What really got me was when they passed this basket around. But before that, I mean, my mother would put money in, a little bit here, a little bit there, right? But then they would send you a letter saying you must give a percentage of your income. Oh, I read that and I thought, what is this?
It's not the Bible.
No, I mean, here I'm looking at all these gold, this gold stuff you have, and all this stained glass, and it reeks of rich and money. That's what it reeked of. It really did. I mean, it had an impact on me. And I didn't feel so comfy about it. You know, I thought,
I think it's the attitude of you must do this. The Bible does say that tithing is a good thing, but it does not say, well, you've got to do this. It doesn't take that attitude whatsoever. As a matter of fact, what it says is if you do it, you're going to be blessed. It takes the positive side. Do it and be blessed. It doesn't say don't do it and you'll get kicked in the butt. It says do it and be blessed. That's what it says.
Yeah, and do it because you want to do it, not because you're forced to do it.
Right, exactly.
You know, you don't want to be forced. Nobody wants to be forced. But, you still go to Mass twice a day? I mean, twice on Sundays?
I'm now a Baptist.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so that's completely different, isn't it?
My wife, Joan, was a Catholic And I was a Lutheran when we got married in a Catholic church. But we wound up going to other churches, partly because I became a religion editor of the newspaper where I worked. And I got to know people. And there were some I liked and some I didn't like. So we went to some churches where some people were that I liked. And this one Baptist church really liked
mm-hmm.
it. So we were going there for about 10 years. And that's when a lot of this great stuff happened, including that miracle story I told you about before. The pastor was a pastor, associate pastor of this Baptist church that I'm now mentioning.
And, you know, people can't expect, to me, a miracle is, for example, there is no other explanation. A person wasn't there to help. Well, I've experienced more than that. I almost died 3 times. But besides that, it wasn't in an accident. I got to tell you this because you're going to like this. My son was driving and my husband was still alive. I was in the back seat behind my son. And a car ran a light. I mean, it should have hit us by all means. My son started to turn the wheel. But that wheel turned so far, I mean, it was impossible to turn the wheel like that to pull us out of the way. I saw a flash of red. That was the car coming at us. And we had glass all over the front of our car, like as if this man hit us. But he didn't. And my son, we walked out. We got out, you know, and we went over to the man, and he had hurt his arm. And my son said, Mom, come over here. And I said, what? He said, did you see that? I said, yes, I did. That, to me, I don't even think that you don't consider that a miracle. That is like something of divine order. That was something, I feel that things happen to get you someplace else,
I had almost exactly the same thing happen when I was in a car driving on I-95. And this guy out of control came at it from the rear and apparently didn't even see us. And at the last minute, I don't even think he didn't have time to react, and we didn't have time to get out of the way. But something stopped him. It was like he hit a wall. He hit something, and then all of a sudden he glanced off it and went toward the inside of the road, hit the center island, came back, ricocheted off that, went off the right side and down into a crevasse, did not touch a single car. And let me tell you, there were a lot of cars on the road that day.
Yeah, see, something like
we
that is just
we
so amazing.
He
I believe you. I mean, somebody else might not believe you, David. They'd say, oh, yeah, sure, but something happened to me, so I know it's true.
That was definitely just what you're, the kind of thing that you're talking about.
Exactly.
It was inexplainable. Nothing I did. Had any effect. Nothing the guy behind me did. It was some intervention
that brought
that all about. And nobody got hurt. Nobody even got hurt.
And, you know, my son questioned it.
This is a busy road.
He said, Mom, I couldn't have turned that wheel as much as it turned. It would have been impossible.
Right.
But it turned.
Yeah,
and we weren't hurt at all. I wasn't even shaken. My son said to me, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm fine. I mean, I accepted it as what happened, and I saw it. It's okay. It's good. I thanked the above, and you know the
our
man.
Our car wasn't even touched, and both boys were in the back seat. If this car had crashed into us,
oh, you would have been all
going.
Yes, absolutely.
It was going about 100 miles an hour. We had both boys dead in the back seat.
Yep, and probably didn't have seatbelts then either, right?
Well, it wouldn't have really mattered because the car that we had didn't have a back. Trunk, so crashing into it, it was just like straight up and down. It was not much of a vehicle at all. Anything that hit it from behind would have gone right into the back seat because there was nothing in between there.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing? It's amazing. It's just
the Lord does those things, and we don't can't
exactly
explain them.
You know, and when I was 32, I got seriously ill. I contracted a virus of some sort, and it took over my whole body. I couldn't even stand. I had to go and see him. I could have gone to the hospital, but I didn't want to. No, I'm not a good patient. The doctor knew that. I said, nope. He said, okay, then you got to come in every day. I have to see you every single day. There was another man that was sick at the same time. My numbers were off the chart. I went in and I got two injections every day from him or his associate. And it took me weeks, but listen to this one. One night I was awakened and my whole room was glowing like a beautiful golden yellow. And I thought it was like a light. I said, oh, you know, I looked up and I thought, did I leave a light on? You know, and I'm looking around, blinking my eyes. I looked behind myself, David, and on the wall was a 7-foot crystal, and the glow was coming from that. Did I recover? Of course I recovered. Did I have any after effects? No, none. None whatsoever.
It seems like everything you're saying leads into something that's happened to me, too. I had something very similar happen to me.
Oh my goodness. We are on the same path, you and I. Okay, what's next?
Yeah. Well, I can do it quickly. I had this awful pain in the lower abdomen. And Joan, who was, I told you, British nurse, thought it was some kind of colitis. It was bad. It was very, very bad. Hospitalized late at night, around midnight, similar to your scenario, only a little bit different, you know, plot line, but similar. And I'm talking to God, and all of a sudden I start thinking, I'm hearing some feedback, and I'm hearing this still small voice from him. He says, he asked me three questions, or at least the still small voice that I was hearing asked three questions. And see if I can remember them. One of them was, do you believe that I can heal you? And I said, of course I believe that. I know you can do that, Lord. I'm giving you miracles. And the second one was, do you believe, and this is like whisper, but very definite what it was. It was tangible. Do you believe that I want to heal you? I had to think about it for a second. No, he did this in the Bible. Of course he wants to heal me. So he said yes. And he asked one, the hard one. He asked me, do you believe I will heal you? And that was one that required what you're talking about, what we were both talking about, which is belief. And I thought for a minute, and I said, yes, I do. Well, what happened was I went to sleep, woke up in the morning, got tested, and the doctor came into my room. It was like he didn't know what to say. He couldn't figure it out. And he finally told me, he said, we have no clue what was wrong with you. There is nothing at all in there, nothing detectable at all.
Nothing that we can fix.
Whatever it was is gone. And he didn't even know what it was. So I don't even know what it was. All I know is that I was really sick.
And you walked out of there.
Yep, walked out that very day, and it was no more.
Yeah, I had somebody else on the show once that he was hit by a train. His name is David Ditchfield. I remember him. He was telling me all about it, and I said, David, I said, well, what in the world were you doing on the tracks? You know, we were laughing. And he said, well, I was in my car, and I got out. For some reason, he was hit by a train, and he survived.
Whoa.
And but you'll hear stories like that. I don't question it at all, and you wouldn't either, because we believe.
No.
You see, we know anything is possible. I always say, somebody will say, well, why do you believe that's going to happen for you? I said, because with God, anything is possible.
All
bottom
is
line,
possible.
That's it, period.
Yeah, that's it. In fact, that's scriptural. With God, all things are possible. And
you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to be because he's going to make it happen. And, you know, but we also have to remember to give thanks.
Yes.
You know, you can't.
Yes.
Yes, you have to give thanks always. You know, even when I'm talking every day, when I do a little bit of meditation, I don't do it all the time. It depends on what I have to do. But I always give thanks, you know. Sometimes my little talk is more like a dissertation, and I'm not real happy with the world, and I'm not happy with a lot of things going on, so I got to speak my mind. And I figure, after all, you know, it's good to hear from somebody on earth that's, you're probably hearing it every day all over the world from many, many people, but I'm going to say my little talk, and I'm going to let you know I don't like this, and I think you should fix it. You know,
well, the Bible does say, in everything give thanks, because this is the will of
yes.
God. But it
yes,
doesn't say
will.
That you should not, he doesn't say for everything, because not everything is good, but in every circumstance there is something that you can give thanks for. And that's what you were just saying. We should thank God in every situation.
Yes. Now tell me about your children. I mean, are they just like you? Are they spiritual like you? Do they believe like you?
Yeah. Yes. They're both Christians. I'm not going to say what denominational, because I don't think the denomination is nearly as important as what
no.
you believe, and how you believe, and that you believe. They're both believers. In fact, all four of us were baptized in that same Baptist church I'm talking about. Joan got rebaptized because she had been baptized by sprinkling in a Catholic church, and I had been baptized by sprinkling in a Lutheran church. So we were immersed, down and up.
Oh, really?
And
what was that like?
Romans 5 does say that. It's a picture. Going down into the water and coming up out of the water is a picture of being dead and then coming back to life in Christ.
Yeah, that's what that is.
That's why it's baptism, and the word baptism is from baptizo, which in Greek means immersion. That's what it means.
And you were older when this happened to you too. I mean, you were, so was it scary for you? I don't like water.
I of course, having been a baby, I couldn't recall my first baptism anyway. So it was a new experience for both Joan and me, and it was a good experience. It was a meaningful experience because of what it meant, going down as if you were dead and then alive.
And then you're coming up
and
you're
like
alive.
Like the resurrected Christ came
Where
up.
Did they do this at? Was it in a lake or a river or what?
This one, they had a baptistry in the church, but some churches do it in rivers or lakes. And I live in Lake County, Florida, and there are plenty of lakes around here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of baptisms going on here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in South Carolina. Not originally from here. I'm from Michigan, from Detroit. And it's I love it here. I would never go back. Are you from Florida?
No. Joan was from Ohio and I was from New Jersey. We got married, came down to Florida for a honeymoon, really liked it. Next year we came back, and this time, for our first anniversary, and this time we stopped along the way in a couple of places to put in applications for work. And I applied in the Miami Herald, which was the number one newspaper in the state, and Fort Lauderdale News, which was probably about number two. And Joan applied in the same area in South Florida for the hospital. And both of us got jobs. In fact, it was only about a week later that I was called, told that I had a job covering the Miami Dolphins. In my very first, talk about a dream job,
That's
very
a
first
big
thing.
Deal, David.
Yeah, and this was the first.
To me, would be a big deal.
this was the first year of their existence, and the bonus was in the summertime, in the spring, I got to cover the New York Yankees from training camp in Fort Lauderdale. It was a dream. It was. Yeah.
That was a dream job.
The Lord was good. And Joan had this wonderful job in the hospital. She was running one of the floors. The nurse. She was a nurse in charge of the floor. Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. My neighbor was like that. Yeah.
I had
a lot of different. I worked in a nursing home. I did their hair because I was a hairdresser in Michigan, and I did that. But I could only do that. I lost my parents less than 5 months apart, and I was an only child. So once my father passed, that was it. I was done working there. I didn't want to be there anymore. And a lot of the patients had passed away that I'd known for quite a few, because I worked there like 7 years, so I knew a lot of them. And it was a great experience for me, because I'd go in on Tuesdays and there'd be a line outside my door waiting for me, if you don't think that didn't make me feel good, these people who were, you know, a lot of them couldn't use their hands, and some of them were kind of mentally disturbed, but they just loved me. I was like their little angel that they could come and see. And so I loved that. But like I said, then I lost Mom and Dad, and which was, everybody said, well, wasn't that hard? No, it wasn't really hard on me. I don't know. I did it. And I just didn't want to work there anymore. And then I worked in tennis. I've always been doing for people. I've always been in service all my life, been in service. So, you know, it was okay. The tennis, David, I worked for $3.35 an hour. That was minimum wage then, $3.35. And I thought it was a big deal. That was a lot. Oh, my gosh, I actually get paid for standing there and taking money, and that just set the way for me. And then I went to a larger club and made more money there. But, you know, it's funny how we look back at our lives.
Did I hear the word tennis? Is that what it
is? Tennis. Tennis, T-E-N-N-I-S, yes.
Were you a player or a coach or what?
No, I just worked at the club. I assisted head pro.
Yeah.
And I was a director there, so I handled the USTA. We had that. And any club functions, and I handled 10 courts. And, it was a great experience. I loved it there. I really, really loved it there. But things changed. You know, we got somebody in there that was a pencil pusher, and I really shouldn't complain about her. But she'd go back to the boss and say, well, you know, she's on the phone and her son is opening this business. She was listening to my conversation. She'd go back and squeal. Well, David, I got my just dues. I mean, she got her just dues. It came to be where they came in, the manager came in, and she says, well, you know, you have, you manage all the courts, all the permanent court time, all of this, all of that. So we're going to give it to this other lady. I'm not even going to say her name. We're going to give it to her. And you need to show her how you do it. I said, okay. So they left because we had a USTA tournament on a Friday, and so they left because they had to prepare for the function. They supplied the food and stuff, and so I walked over to her desk, and I said, you need to take out paper and pen or pencil. And she looked at me, and she said, kind of like, why? I said, because I'm only going to tell you one time how to do this. And, David, I meant it. I meant for her. She couldn't do one thing if she had to. Me, I'm answering the phones, I'm taking money, I'm answering my own phones, I'm handling all the courts, I'm handling all the memberships. She could not even help because she didn't know how. And I stood there, and I said, are you writing this down? Yeah, I said, don't ask me. I said, I'm going to tell you once, that's it. They wanted me to tell you how to do it, I'm telling you how to do it. That was my way. I mean, I could have been really sweet and kind, but she made my life miserable there. And it was just my little way of, okay, I can play this game. I'm not going to hurt you, but I'm going to show you what you are. And I did. And go ahead, David.
I was just going to say that tennis was a big part of my life, too, because in South Florida, you can play all year round.
Oh, of course, Chris Everett, yes!
And, well,
she's
Chris,
my favorite,
Chris,
oh my God, I love her.
Well, she was she was a teenager, and I was in my early to mid-20s, and she was already a great player. So
yes.
I did a lot of stuff about Chris Everett in the
last
thing.
And in sports, of course you would.
You would
be privy to all
and,
kinds of things.
And
I,
she won everything that there was to win. And the last thing, the time I saw her, she was at a tennis tournament in which her son was entered, high school state tournament. So her son was one of several players on this team. And at the end of the day, her son's team had won. And I heard her say that that was more exciting to her than when she had won Wimbledon.
Yeah. Oh, yes. She's gracious. But, you know, now the owner really liked me, and you know, until this woman came sashaying in, is what I always say. But anyways, if it was a time for, like, any tennis tournaments and she was on, okay, I got the TV on for you. Your girl is on. Everybody knew I adored her. I adored her.
Well, she was a very nice person. She was a nice person.
Yes,
nice
that's
person.
Good. That's good to hear.
She still is.
And she was the ice maiden, wasn't she? That's what they called her, the ice maiden.
But she was, she wasn't as big as some of the players, but she was. I think you're absolutely right. She was absolutely cool. And could absolutely function mentally as well as physically, which is important in tennis. You have to have a plan. And she could do it. She could think it through, and she knew how to beat players that were bigger, stronger, faster. She was mentally strong and physically strong.
Yeah, exactly. She was, and boy. But yeah, see, that's when the owner really liked me. I mean, he'd say, "Go here, I got the chair ready for you. A big screen TV, you know, go ahead." I mean, you know, and he was such a miser that he would put little notes. I was only allowed 30 hours. Well, I did have a big job. I really should have opened up my mouth long before that because I did a lot. And if I did more than 30 hours, David, he put a little note in my pay. I'll be sure not to go over 30 hours next week. Can you imagine that? And he would say to me, "Oh, you're just like my wife." And I thought it was a compliment, but it wasn't a compliment. He loathed his wife because his wife could do everything just like I could. I mean, we didn't even need him there. I could do everything myself.
So he probably felt a little bit intimidated. You know, when your wife is your spouse, whether it's husband or wife, has got this thing that he can do or she can do that you can't. It is a little bit intimidating. And I think there were, you know, with me, there were things that I could do and there were things that Joan could do. And between the two of us, we got along. But if it had been one of those things, well, the one of us was just so dominant, I don't know if we would have gotten along like we did because that's
Then he found out he didn't like what I was. He really didn't like what I was. It wasn't a compliment. And he... I mean, because we didn't need him. I mean, show up once in a while, and I'll do everything else. Just go do what you think. And we had a bookkeeper there. She was really sweet. And he was not needed. All he did was sit there, and he had TVs going. He wanted to see everything that everybody was doing. And then he had us write down every phone call we made. That's what a miser he was. And Jeff, the guy that I worked with, he felt so horrible because I was being treated like that. And, you know, he made a lot of money there. And I said, "Jeff, just leave it alone. I'll take care of it." And but we were just good friends. I worked with his wife before that. And it was very hard for me to leave that place. It was very, very difficult. I mean, I just sobbed. I did not want, I mean, you know, not there, but I loved everybody. They loved me. It was like, you know, you have something and you've been doing it for years, like what you were doing. And then all of a sudden, it changes for you.
It's gone.
But,
it changes,
you know, what
a lot.
Happened, I had to look at it a different way because afterwards, I ended up working with my son at our business, and I learned that. And I got a chance to work with my son, and that's what God wanted me to do. Because
great opportunity to be with your son.
Yeah, I got to work with my son.
Yeah.
He had graduated from college, and he wanted to do this business, and so I worked with him. It was great, you know. I learned another phase of business. And so it took me a little while, but then I would start to think about it. There has to be a reason. You know, yeah, like you question, why did you take me from something that I really loved? Because it was something better for you to do, something more
for you
to
do. In my case, though, it wasn't even a question. When I prayed that prayer, I was ready for whatever he had for me to do. And so even though it was a big change, I was ready for it. I really was ready for it. And I was eager to do it because I knew that this was what God wanted me to do.
Well, and you have to look at things that way. This is divine intervention, divine order. It's a sequence of things that have to happen. And I always tell people, and I've told my son this, I mean, he's a father and he's a grown man, and I'll say, look, it's kind of look at it this way. It's like God has his round table, or Jesus, whichever you prefer, and he's got everybody at that round table, all the apostles, and he looks at them and says, okay, we have Natalie here. Now, she needs to get over here and then go there. Now, how do you profess we do it? You better pick up the speed here. That's what I feel. I feel that he's a directive. And so everything, and I talk to so many people, hundreds of people, and they all say the same thing. You know, I started off doing this, and then I ended up doing this. And I think if we can do something that we love, like you and me, we're very, very fortunate because most people hate their job. And, I mean, you know, I laugh at my son. I said, you know, I look at some of these people, and, I mean, I could do their job and their job and their job because I was trained like that to multitask, not just one job sitting at a desk. I mean, I could handle the front desk. I could handle the people calling. I did it all. But the whole thing of it is that if you're not appreciated, you're going to be removed from that because you need to be appreciated to keep doing the good work that you can do. And after I left that place, I realized it, David, that this was God's doing. He wanted me to work with my son.
It was probably, the better thing for you to do to leave and go on to something better is what's happened to you, right?
Right. Yeah. And I didn't have to worry about a boss. I was the boss.
Well, that makes a huge difference.
So it's kind of like, okay, she had all those years. That's enough. Let's just get her out of there. But I love the guy that I worked with, and he was miserable, and he came to see me, and he said, they offered for me to go back. They wanted me to come back because they couldn't run the place without me. But they only wanted to give me a 50-cent raise. Back then, David, I was making $10 an hour running the place. And he only wanted to give me 50 cents an hour raise. And then she said, the manager, when she met me, she said, because, you know, Jeff told me she was coming to meet me. She said, oh, but he'll give you an office in glass with just Jeff, so you don't have to be with the other lady. And I looked at her and I said, yeah, because it's a write-off. That's why he went. But he couldn't. I said, I won't come back unless it's 15 an hour. And I said, you can go back and tell him that. She said, well, I don't think he's going to do that. I said, oh, well. I was working at the Northwest. I was working at a YMCA. I was running another club. I moved. I was asked to go there because my name was well known. She was at Farmington. God, this is four courts. She was used to doing 10. So it was easy, see. But it didn't make me feel good. So when the chance came for me to work with my son, then I knew. Nah, this is just not. I wasn't happy at this other place at the YMCA. I worked at a YWCA, too, at their tennis club. So I had a lot of background in it.
The YMCA and YWCA have a lot of sporting events. In fact, the one in Orlando had a couple of sporting events that I covered.
You're a world of information. I can pick your brain.
Yeah.
And all the stories you could tell, David, about, Detroit is like the Red Wings and the Tigers and the Pistons.
I spent time in Detroit. I believe I saw a Miami Dolphin. Detroit. What's the name of their football team?
Lions.
Lions. Yeah, Detroit Lions game. Yeah, but that was pretty long ago now. I mean, that wasn't recent. That was back in the 1960s when the Dolphins did win a couple of Super Bowls. But that's a long time ago.
I know.
Yeah, I got a chance to go to a lot of ugly big cities.
Yeah.
Football
yeah.
Games.
Oh, yeah.
And that
for
was
sure.
That was one of them.
Yeah, Detroit is still a very big sports area because of what we have there, and I miss that. But you know, when you grow up with something like that, and then it changes, and it, you know, people come in, and then money comes in, and money does all the talking, and then it's not the same. It's just, that's what I feel bad about too, David, is that. And you probably do, too, is because so many young people are missing what we experienced, and it'll never be there again. It'll never happen. It won't go back. And, you know, I mean, the pendulum swings back, but it's not going to ever be like Detroit will never be like what it was. When I was growing up, I could walk the streets of downtown Detroit and never miss a beat. I was fine. Nobody bothered me, ever.
Yeah, when I went to these cities for sporting events, I never had any problem with, you know, worrying about being accosted or beat up or shot or
no.
anything like that.
Oh,
but,
no.
but now those same cities are really crime capitals, so they're big problems in the cities like Detroit and Chicago.
I know. It's just, it's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very sad. Very sad.
I mean, it's sad, but you know, everything is online. You can see everything online. My son still follows. He doesn't follow the Detroit Lions anymore. The one player retired. I can't remember his name to save my soul. Oh, he just adored him. But he does follow the baseball team, the Tigers, and
Tigers.
He went to see the Tigers in Tampa. A few years ago, he loves Cabrera, and so he got to talk with him and got his autograph and pictures with him and everything. And so that was kind of nice for him. But once you're hooked on something like that, you're hooked forever. You're always looking out. You're always watching, you know. But, yeah. Oh, you know, you have a lot of stories. I'm sure of that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you haven't heard many of them. You just heard a couple.
No, and just the talk we had on Chris Evert. Made me feel really happy and really good.
Yeah, she's a very good person, and her dad also. He trained her in more ways than one. He was a tennis coach, but he also influenced her character, and she has strong character.
She really does.
Right now, but she does have strong character, and it's.
Now we did go to. The place where her dad taught her, and it says the home of Chris Evert was etched at the top. We didn't play on the courts, but we went there because we would stay down in Lauderdale.
Yeah,
and that was
one
of
the.
I told everybody, I'm going there. I'm going to
go
see where she plays, where she grew up. You know, because she was on the circuit then. She was, pretty well known. But yeah, I admired her. Last match that she had, I felt so horrible. I wanted her to keep going, but then I realized she understood. She didn't want to go out as number three or number four. She wanted to go out feeling really good about her career, and that's why she did it, I'm sure. But, yeah. But now look at the Amazons at play now. I mean, they're so big, right?
Yeah, they're much bigger than her, but I don't know if they're better. It would be an interesting matchup. Because some of them really are bigger and stronger than most.
Oh, yeah, they're nearly 6 feet tall. They're huge.
But they don't have the same ability to dart back and forth. You know, when you're really big, it's hard to stop and turn around and
the
go
bigger
back.
You are, the harder you fall.
And a player like Evert, who could hit the ball in one corner and then come back and hit it in the other corner, they could wear down a person like that.
Oh, yeah. Because their legs are longer, their whole body is bigger, so they have to use every bit of it. Right. Yeah.
It would have been a good matchup because there were some. I'm sure there were some points that they would have just aced her, but there were some when she would have just chased them back and forth until.
Oh yeah,
she
would have run them ragged.
That's
what was so sweet about her.
Would have been a good match.
And I can remember. I mean, you saw her, but I can remember watching on TV, and I'd be yelling at her. Make them go side to side. What are you doing? Wear them out. They can't keep up with you.
Well,
but
she
it's
did
not
that
as
to
easy
a lot
when
of
you're on the court.
She
you're just yelling at somebody to do this and this and this, you know. But, yeah, I'm happy to talk to you about one of my loves. You know, that's so sweet. And, of course, you know, God and Jesus and all of that. You're a nice man. You've done a lot of great things. Continue with the books. Are you writing another one?
Yes, it's called End Time Living. And it has some practical advice toward how we should live during the end time. Let me just mention at least the one thing. My website.
Yes, I was going to say that. We need to talk about that.
Right. For more information about the books, the order, or just to read about them or whatever and find out more about me, it's endtimesmystery.com. Endtimes
yes.
with an S, mystery.com. And it really has just about all the information you need. There's also a nice page on Amazon. My last name is spelled Heron, spelled H-E-E-R-E-N. First name David. And I've been using an initial S, S as in Sam, for my Christian-related books. I use Dave Heron for my sports books and David S. Heron for my Christian books. But that's really, that covers it, I think.
Well, I've enjoyed my talk with you. I really, really have. I would like to have maybe an excerpt or something. I'll have Helen contact you so that we can be connected, because I would like to put something in my August issue. And then at the bottom of it, I'm going to put your book in my bookstore, but then I'm also going to put the show link. So if people would like to listen, and I'll send it also to you. I'll send it to Helen, and she can send it to you, but I'll ask her to give you my email address so that we can communicate and don't have to bother her. She's so sweet. She calls me her sister. She says, you got to be little. I said, why? She says, I don't know. It's just a feeling I have. She says, so you're my little sis. I said, okay, big sis. I am little. She's really a nice lady.
Yes, she is. She wants to read one of my books.
Well, I don't blame her. I'm going to start yours. I really, what I do is I get so many books that I try to read some of each one, but not, I mean, I don't read like three books in one day. I read, you know, like I'll go to yours, then I have another one, maybe in a few days I'll go to another one, because it's just too difficult.
iSign is a big book because it has a lot of steps and a lot of import, I think. Some of my books are really short. Some of them read in 2.5 hours. So it's not that I always write long. It just happened that with the iSign, it was a lot to write. With God or not, or Day of the Lord, they're much shorter. So it's not like
so is this other book close to being finished, or what?
Yeah, End Time Living is in the final phases. It'll be published soon. And I'm getting already requests about it. There's some interest in it. Because I think a lot of people realize that we do appear to be entering into that phase of what the Bible calls the end time. There's a lot of signs that we are, things that are happening that are prophesied in the Bible. And people are saying, well, you know, what do I do, you know? This is pretty scary.
Yeah, I know.
And some of the things are pretty scary, but we don't. God said, do not be afraid. I've got this. Don't even worry. I've got this.
I've got this, yeah. I've heard that
He didn't say, I've got this, okay. But what he was saying, the attitude was clear. Don't worry. I'll take care of this. And don't worry.
Right.
Don't be anxious. Don't be fearful. There's going to be some hard stuff, but I'll take care of it. He even said
you
that
know,
he was short.
You know, this whole COVID thing, I have a theory about it, and
that could be part of the of the pestilences that are referred to in the
that God was like a comeuppance. Everybody, mostly everybody, thinking about that money. Everything is money, 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 money. Well, I think God decided, okay, I'm going to make it so that money is not going to be plentiful, and you're going to have to appreciate what you have.
Yes. think that's happening right now.
Yes, exactly. That's what I think. That's how I feel.
I agree.
I've told people that.
God is a just God, and if people are sinning in a certain way, he comes back at it. For instance, I think right now there are people who are trying to control this, control that, control this, and cheat and steal and rob and even kill because they want to control things. But when you get to the end time, the last part of the end time, they are going to be the ones that are going to be terrified. And right now they're trying to terrify others so that they can gain more and more control. But in the end, when they see all that's happening around them, they are going to be terrified, and that's the kind of justice that God does. He just does.
Well, it's more balanced. I mean, it's going to be, you know, and appreciating, but it just, it switched over to the money. Everything is, and I always say to people, it always comes back to the money. How much does this cost? Can I do this? I hate that.
So money and power. Money and power, those two
money,
things.
Money, they go hand in hand, don't they?
Yep.
They really do.
I think you're right. I think, it's the money, but also it's the power. Those two things are kind of obsession to a lot of not-so-nice people right now. It's all the power and all the money. And then in the end, God is going to have them quivering in fear. It's going to be just the opposite, because that is a just punishment for what they're doing. Just punishment. But he doesn't.
Yeah.
But even then, he loves people, and he wants us to repent and return to him so that he can, when he returns, take them with him to heaven. But that's up to us. I mean, or up to us or them or whatever we're talking about. Are you going to repent? Are you going to, or are you going to keep on doing the evil things you're doing? And
yeah.
No repentance means not a good conclusion for people, because God is.
And I want to remind now everybody again about your website that's got so much information. It's NDNDTIMES, Mystery, MYSTERY.com. You can go there and see. He's got a blog. He's got things that he talks about. I thought I was ready for retirement, but then my life became amazing. And, you know, sometimes you think that. You know, you think, oh, okay, I can relax. No, you can't relax. You have more to do. So
yeah.
I always tell people a busy mind is a healthy mind.
Right. I think the easy way to remember the website is what it's about. It's about the end times. So
yes.
the website is endtimesmystery.com.
And you just remember end times and you'll find it, because it's right there.
Yep.
It does come up. Thank you so much for today. I enjoyed our talk. I really did. I feel like I'm on a high. Like I feel I can conquer anything. Earlier today
yeah,
it was not
too.
So good.
Natalie, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was a great talk. Good luck to you, and thank you for your story about Chris Evert. I love it. And I will get your email address from Helen, okay?
Yeah, we've got so many things in common.
Oh, yes, we do. Okay,
thanks
have
again.
A great evening. And everybody, as I always say, and I end my, you know, I end my talk with the same thing, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Trust me on that one. And I'm going to say goodnight. I have another show on Friday. That one is going to be earlier. At 2 o'clock, because he's out in California. So, you know me, I make all the adjustments that I have to make, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. But I'm going to close this out, and again, go to David's site, End Times. Take a look. I mean, he's got so many wonderful things, endtimesmystery.com. And listen to the show if you haven't heard all of it. You came in late. Listen to it, because we speak on a lot of good things that are very important in the world today. So, with that, I will say good night, and I'm going to put my little pizza in the oven, and I'm going to have my dinner. Okay, so goodbye, and I love all of you. Be safe, and don't get lax with your masks and being around people. You know, things are changing still out there. And if you've been vaccinated, that's wonderful, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be free from all of it. You know, it's not a walk in the park. I mean, be careful. And if you didn't get it, and you don't want to get it, that's your choice, of course. I respect that. But anyways, okay, I will see you on Friday at 2 o'clock with another great guest. Thank you again, David. You're wonderful. I love you dearly. Bye-bye.
I love you too, Natalie.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Bye.